The U.S. Center for Disease Control announced this week that Americans should prepare for the coronavirus spreading in the United States. In other parts of the world, the disease is already spreading quite rapidly. At this time, many security analysts are waking up to the reality that there are countries less prepared to contain and treat the coronavirus. These countries may become weak links in the global chain to stem the spread of the viral infection, intensifying the consequences of this nascent pandemic. In Northeast Asia, that country is North Korea. For its part, Pyongyang is taking this disease seriously. Its response has been stronger than it had been against the 2014 Ebola outbreak, the H1N1 outbreak in 2009, and the SARS outbreak in 2002-2003. It has been described by some analysts as unusually high profile. So what might be aiding or detracting North Korea's capacity to address this major threat? Our guest today is a medical professional who has traveled to North Korea over 8 times and has visited remote locations to examine the country's health systems. He joins us today to provide his take on North Korea's public health capacity. With no further delay, from the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Yong Kwon, and you're listening to Korean Context. Dr. John Grundy has had a career spanning 25 years with experience in healthcare provision and management in places ranging from Australia to Cambodia. He's also one of a handful of medical experts who has had the opportunity to look into North Korea's healthcare system, evaluating maternal and child health programs in the country for international agencies like the World Health Organization. He is currently an independent consultant and is an adjunct research fellow at James Cook University, Australia. Dr. Grundy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Yong.
One of the big misconceptions about North Korea that we often hear in the United States is that there are not enough doctors and hospitals in the country. But you pointed out in a previous paper you wrote for KAI that this is not quite an accurate or nuanced picture of the situation on the ground. Could you give us a broad overview of some of the deficits that the North Korean healthcare system faces?
I think one of the surprising things when you do visit DPR Korea or North Korea is the size of the health workforce and the number of health facilities linked across the country. As a centralized socialist system, its origins are really in the socialist history post-Second World War. So there's a heavy investment in health structures and development of health workforce in the 60s, 70s and 80s. So what you see when you go there is a vast network of hospitals in provinces and counties, and down at lower administrative level of the ri, or the dong, it's called in the cities, there's hospitals and primary healthcare facilities. And down at the primary care level, there are what's referred to as section doctors, and there's one for approximately every 100 to 150 houses. So the health workforce density and the density of facilities would be one of the highest in the Asian Pacific region. So then the question people ask is, well, why is the health situation so grave? So what you observe in the system in DPR Korea is, although the facilities, structures and workforce are there, the inputs to that system have been cut off, largely cut off, not totally. So, you know, operational finance, essential medicines and equipment, skill development for the health workforce, transport and communications. So they're all the essential inputs in a system to make it functional and running. Due to the sanctions and due to poor economic output of the country, and lack of finance, international finance, there's a system in place, but the inputs, excluding human resources, are very much lacking, apart from some inputs from the national government and selected international agency partners who are doing the best they can in such a tough circumstance. So that's how I would summarise it. A sound structure, but bereft of inputs.
And of course, this must be a situation that the North Korean public health system has faced Since the 1990s, given the economic collapse that they've experienced with the reduction of material assistance from China and the Soviet Union, have there been any significant changes in the past 10 or 5 years that you know of that you feel would make North Korea's public health system more or less capable of, say, addressing public health challenges, including infectious diseases?
I haven't been in the country since 2014, but what we can observe, you know, is that the international context has a very large impact on this. If there's no trade flows and there's no movement of people across borders, then the country becomes very limited in its capacity to recover, rehabilitate, develop. And so I think even though there were a few glimpses of light in the international dynamics, it appears sanctions are tightening even further. In terms of flows of development assistance for health, they're more or less stable, but compared to neighbouring countries at a similar level of economic development, it's much less than you would expect given the seriousness of the health situation. And then the country's continuing to be afflicted by these natural disasters, floods, drought, and we're still on this precipice of up to 40 or 50% of the population being food insecure. So I would suggest the situation is stable, but it could deteriorate quite quickly if any of these external threats further develop. And of course, one of those threats is emerging infectious diseases such as the coronavirus. There is some light on the horizon, and I tried to highlight this in the 2015 paper, where the international partnerships for health are sufficiently open, trustworthy and transparent, you can really achieve results for ordinary people. So the most recent example of that, and if the listeners want to go to the World Health Organization website for DPR Korea, the country's just eliminated measles, a vaccine-preventable disease. So this is quite an achievement with such an underfunded health system. And so they've achieved that through very sound partnerships with international partners in the United Nations and public-private partnerships based in Geneva. So to achieve that result, you need good vaccine coverage for children and you need a good surveillance and reporting system. So where there's sound partnerships and trustworthy partnerships, things can work out. So I would say, in answer to your question, Yong, that the situation is serious but somewhat unchanged, but with emerging risks of tightening sanctions, natural disasters, and emerging infectious diseases.
Your narrative breaks a lot of, I think, preconceived notions that people have about how North Korea operates and about how North Korea approaches the public health system. I think there is a general perception that the state is quite callous when it comes to public health. But based on what you're suggesting and what you've just discussed, it seems like the government is, one, quite invested in addressing a lot of the public health challenges that the country is facing, and in these areas are quite open to partnering with international organizations. But at the same time, one of the curious things that come up is that we don't really have proper public health data when it comes to North Korea. Why might that be the case? I mean, surely having a open, accessible public health data would simply facilitate the North Korean government's desire to provide better public health to the people of North Korea if partnerships with international organizations are critical in achieving this objective.
Yeah, that's a very good point. For people who worked in the country, this question comes up a lot because it's quite frustrating, because we know the pathway to international development assistance is a transparent presentation of the gaps in the system that need to be addressed. And, you know, when I was there, once again, if the trust is there and partnerships are there, the information can come. Working on, for example, a national immunisation program or multi-year plan or a health sector plan, the officials were reasonably open because they could see that a planning process that's transparent to the international community could be a pathway for partnerships. But at the same time, if you just do a glance through the international non-academic literature, for example, just a search through the web, what you'll find is pretty much a dominance of narrative that presents a very dark picture. And here I'm moving into conjecture. I'm presuming that the consistent presentation of a dark picture, and of course there's a lot that is dark, has maybe internal political impacts in terms of officials or senior leaders being told by international people that they're not working for their people or not doing the work they should or not investing in their people. It's taken on board as criticism. So that's why I think we need to get some more balance in the international discourse on health and human security and politics right across the spectrum, really. And so when a situation is very troublesome and serious, it's also important to try and shine a light where things have worked. Just to, first of all, provide the recognition to the people inside the country who work so hard with so little, and also to motivate international partners to look at North Korea through the lens of ordinary people and not just political leaders. The hesitance to present data, I think, has a lot to do with the model of politics there, the centralised one-party socialist state. And the other reason is that there's a perception that the data will be used against them. So for that reason, I would suggest we talk closely to the international organisations, public-private partnerships, and the NGOs, non-government organisations that work there, so that they can illustrate where things can actually work.
In response to the coronavirus outbreak in China, North Korea has sealed the borders in response. From your engagement with the North Korean public healthcare system and cognizant of some of the real limitations that the system has, do you have any sense for what the North Korean state might be doing in addition to take precautions regarding the recent outbreak?
Once again, my 4 years gap there is a limitation here. I think in terms of detection of the virus, I mean, all countries, I think, are having to scramble to put in place the systems for detection of the virus and how you go about it. And so I think the situation will be no different in the north. And because of the economic, social and political isolation of the country, the state will be partnering closely with the World Health Organization or other international organizations there to ensure that the correct planning is in place and the correct diagnostics, etc., to be put in place. So I think they'll be working quite hard to respond. I mean, they have had some experience with influenza outbreaks and SARS before, but I think they're still very under-equipped to deal with an outbreak. It's why it's very important for the international community to work closely with them. You know, for the acutely ill patients, for example, I think in Pyongyang and perhaps in quite a few of the provincial capitals, they might have some capacity to treat and manage the acutely ill patients. But if you go down to counties, the essentials of emergency medical care are not there. So oxygen supplies, blood supplies, intravenous equipments, personal protective equipment, even the most basic items may be lacking essential medicines in particular. So detecting is going to be difficult because of their need to develop quickly the laboratory capacity to detect. And then treatment, due to the running down of their hospital sector because of years of isolation, apart from the capital city, some provincial capitals, or areas where development partnerships have taken place. In those other areas of the country, very difficult to treat. In relation to prevention, yes, you're right. It appears that the borders have been sealed, people have been quarantined. I think their political networks, what they refer to as the people's committees throughout the country, will be able to inform the population about prevention. But the health workforce itself is at high risk because I'm sure they won't have the personal protective prevention equipment to safeguard themselves. So I would expect now that international organisations are working with the state to import these products as rapidly as possible. Once again, Yong, we get back to the external environment. After so many decades of isolation, apart from selected partnerships with health organisations, it's not just that the borders are closed and you can't have resources flowing in, is that the country's own productive capacity gets run down. In previous years, a lot of these equipments, vaccines even, they would have been able to produce themselves. But when there's such an economic and political stranglehold around the borders with products, services and finance not flowing in and out, decay must take place. And this is what's happening. But I'm sure that once vaccines are produced for this infectious disease, the country is very successful at running immunisation campaigns, as illustrated by measles elimination. So I think there's good prospects there for resolution with the production of a vaccine, but it would need a massive inflow of products and services into the north to comprehensively deal with this outbreak.
And now, this is, of course, leveraging some of the strengths of the North Korean public health system that you listed earlier, that the network of doctors and facilities at local levels are actually a boon that could really assist North Korea in combating this infectious outbreak. Simultaneously, you listed a set of material, medical supplies and equipments that are most vital that North Korea needs currently to potentially prevent and contain the further spread of a disease like the coronavirus. But I wanted to go back to something else that you mentioned. You mentioned also that in addition to scarcity in medical supplies, that there are also logistical challenges in coordinating public health system in North Korea. What are the other non-medical supply needs that you feel North Korea needs to effectively combat an infectious outbreak or even other public health challenges that the country faces?
This is the big question, really. If we looked at the sanctions as the outer circle, the inner circle is the basic infrastructure of the country, which impacts on public health. So, for example, if you have a network of health facilities from Rhee to county to province to the central level in Pyongyang, ambulances, road networks, communications. You need fuel for ambulances, and fuel is very short. The roads in the country are absolutely tortuous. There are some good roads, but there's a lot of very rough road, which makes it difficult to transport. Telecommunications networks. I know the mobile networks have come to Pyongyang, but in the countryside, I'm not sure what's occurred in the last 4 years, but when I was there, there didn't appear to be any very effective communications. So there's some of the issues. In hospitals and primary healthcare centres or RE facilities, you know, the supply of energy, clean water and sanitation. It's a grim picture to go into a facility that is so cold, minus 20 in the winter or whatever, and no heating. And the taps will not run or may not run. Of course, it depends on the facility you go to, but some that I went to were lacking all of these things, including the most basic equipment, such as an intravenous giving set, you know, the equipment to connect the fluid to the body, even such basic equipment and medical needs. But I think roads, communications, energy, water supply, sanitation. It's a huge development task, and public health and health systems, they're not isolated technical constructs. They're integrated with the society and the economy. If though the basics of energy supply, water, sanitation, transport and communications are all under threat due to insufficient economic development and cut off of trade and sanctions, etc., it will need a massive input, not just into hospitals and health centres, but in all the infrastructure that underlies that. For example, a lot of these urban areas in the countryside, they have gravity-fed water systems, big tanks on hills, and the water runs down. But you have to pump the water up, so you need energy for that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you go into a restaurant or a hospital, don't expect too much when you turn on a tap. But, of course, then you'll go to other areas, for example, in some parts of Pyongyang, and it's all working quite well. And I imagine, once again, four-year gap in the provincial hospitals where there's been the required investments, you may have these systems in place. But unless the infrastructure's developed, the public health declines.
And I think herein lies the great challenge in that a lot of these infrastructure developments that you listed, like fuel for vehicles, perhaps asphalt for the roads and other electricity generating capacities, all these run into the challenge of international sanctions because of the concern from the international community that they might be siphoned off or diverted for military purposes. And I think that presents the perhaps the biggest hurdle for the international community. Now, in an ideal world, perhaps, where North Korea no longer holds nuclear weapons and where sanctions are not in place, you mentioned that there is a disparity between services that are available in the capital, Pyongyang, and in the provincial cities. What kind of reforms do you see needed in North Korea to better build a public health system once North Korea has access to the international markets?
Yeah, look, I think it's much too early, in my opinion, this is my opinion, it's much too early to talk about reform of the sector. I think there's, you know, as you've pointed out earlier, there's work to be done on improving information, reporting, data analysis. But what is required at this stage in this country are inputs. The actual structure of the system achieved high workforce densities, so they can get coverage quite quickly. What's holding them back is the inputs. So I think at this point in time, from my perspective, the reforms are not internal to the sector. The reforms required are in the system of international relations. In terms of the domestic political structure, I don't have a view on that. As a health expert, you go from country to country and the political systems are different and you adapt. But I think in terms of reform, it's really the model of sanction is designed to pressure the state, that what it's doing is it's punishing poor people. And I don't think that's the intent of international sanctions, but that's what the effects are. And it's very disturbing to see people who you can see are asking for help, right, but their message is not getting out.
We have seen positive news in recent days with the U.S. State Department offering their support in addressing challenges related to the coronavirus if North Korea needs them. So perhaps there might be some positive developments coming from that outreach. But I'm also cognizant that here in the United States and elsewhere in the world, as you mentioned, there are conversations that need to be had that are not happening. Of these needed conversations, what kind of topics do you think needs to be brought up? And what do you think we should be doing to change the conversation, to change our focus from conventional security challenges related to North Korea to one that is more human security oriented, that is more focused not on North Korea, but one that is focused on region and perhaps the world as well?
Yeah, there's a number of ways we could approach it. First of all, in the field of foreign policy and, you know, foreign relations, a lot of the discourse is around national security and nationalism, particularly national security, I think, from, you know, my country, your country, North Korea, whichever country you go to. The discussion is very tightly modelled around national security, and nationalism has a resurgence. I think when we talk about national security, quite often it's really talking about the security of and stability of rival states. So it's an important topic, of course, and the discussion needs to continue. Everyone wants stability in their own country and no threats. But I think it needs to be balanced with the discussion about human security. So when we read the discourse on sanctions, it's almost always, from my point of view, within the domain of national security. So people say sanctions are not working because the state's not shifting its policy. But the question is not, are sanctions working? It's what impact they're having on ordinary people. So I think balancing discussions of national security with discussions on human security will open everyone's eyes a little and perhaps open pathways. I think it's pleasing to hear what you say about the role of the United States government in trying to work closer with North Korea on the coronavirus. But of course, because of bilateral relations can be tense, I think opening up a discussion on how rival states can use multilateral or public-private partnerships more to channel development partnerships. Because as soon as you move your funds through a UN agency, or if you're not confident with the UN agency, through a public-private partnership such as the Global Fund to fight TB, malaria and HIV/AIDS and the Global Vaccine Alliance for children's vaccines, you take the tension out of the negotiation because you're not negotiating bilaterally. Perhaps this is not the current flavour of politics in the United States, but I think multilateral and public-private partnerships are ways, for example, for countries such as the United States and North Korea to work more closely together without getting too close, if you like. And the last one I would say is communicating more about ordinary lives in North Korea where that is possible. I know it's very difficult. So most of the stories we read are tragic stories of refugees, you know, running across the border and the nuclear tension. And if you look on CNN or any of these international networks, BBC, you know, the images of North Korea that are always projected are of military parades, high-level officials. So we're not getting the feel for the 25 million people who live there. So I would shift the discourse in those three areas: national securities, more innovative ways of doing development partnerships, and trying to engage more realistically about the ordinary lives of North Koreans.
That's it for our episode today. Many thanks to Dr. John Grundy and to you, listeners, for tuning in. Dr. Grundy's 2015 paper covers the evolution of North Korea's public healthcare system from the Cold War era to today. And you can find a link to the document in the description of this episode. We'll be back next week with another update on what is happening with the coronavirus, this time in South Korea. See you then.